Hey, I'm Eric Tornberg, and welcome to another episode of Maker Stories, where we explore what makes the makers, what drives them, what they're scared of, how they make sense of the world, and everything in between. This week's episode was with Joe Greenstein. Joe founded and ran Flixster, a popular movie discovery platform, for nearly a decade before selling it, and since has founded Innerspace, a YC nonprofit that focuses on mental health in startups and how to build great companies in addition to building great products. In this episode, we talk about happiness and startups. Joe shares the struggles of his personal life while building his company, the tension that comes with selling a company and being successful, him wanting to become a father, and much more. All right, here's Joe. What's something that's important for me to know about you?
Shit. You asked the hard questions. For me, and maybe this is an answer to your question. This might be a roundabout answer to your question. For me, the biggest challenge to doing the work that I love doing and living here and being kind of a part of it is the scoreboard, you know, and like we don't have like the official scoreboard, but I think we all kind of know, you know, like you walk to the party, it's like, who's the, like, whatever it is, the, your company's worth the most, or maybe it's the coolest, or the hot, like, it is not just money. It's definitely not just money, but it is like money plus status plus impact, power, I don't know, influence, who you know, something, right? And it's, you know, it's not that far from money. And like, I'm super susceptible to that, you know, like the sort of like the crocodile part of my brain, like, will wake up and, you know, oh, like, you know, what can I do to be more, so, you know, like, am I living up to my potential, or can I be like, you know, what big thing am I going to do next that's going to be super awesome and it's going to impress everyone, right? And that's really not the person that I want to be. Like, you know, when I think about, you know, we all, like, we have our families and our friends and, like, the, like, who do I really want to be in the world? But it's like in the water. It's like, it's really, you know, sort of, and I don't think it's like, oh, people are, it's because there are shallow people doing this that this happens. No, I think it's actually like a part of the system. I actually think like there's a ton of people trying to resist that, but it's just like a part of the system. And so for me, I don't know if I'm answering your question or not, but for me, like the question that I've been wrestling with a lot, especially since we sold Flixster a couple of years ago, but really, you know, if you ask people, even when I was in the middle, like even in the middle of like the ups and downs of the crazy roller coaster, I have this, one of my really close friends, Jeff, reminds me that I used to tell him, Flixster's my warm, you know, like Flixster's an experiment in seeing like, if I can be an entrepreneur and be the kind of person that I want to be at the same time, because if I can, then I can do this for 40 or 50 years. And if I can't, then I have to like go quit and do something else, you know? So like the real test is not like, oh, do I make my money or like, you know, have this one workout, but rather can I like learn how to do it in a way that works with like the person I want to be in the life I want to live so that I can do it for 40 years. Cause like, it's kind of awesome to work on this stuff, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's such a privilege. So anyway, I've been thinking a lot about that, and that's largely what Innerspace is about, is kind of exploring the question, you know, how do we build startups and be part of the startup ecosystem and be the people that we want to be and do it from our best selves and be happy and healthy and all these things, you know, at the same time. And maybe can that even build better company, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think my natural inclination a lot of the time was sort of like, I need the fear to, you know, like, oh, if I wasn't scared, I wouldn't work hard enough, or like my company wouldn't be successful. Like it was a lot of, you know, fear sort of as a motivator. But actually, I don't believe that that's where like I do my best work. I don't think the research is kind of awesome on this. It sort of says happy, like it turns out successful people are not happy, but happy people are more successful, right? So like happiness first, then success, you know, comes with that. Anyway, so that's, I don't know. Is that an answer to your question?
A bit. Did you feel that you were doing both at your time at Flixster? Or?
Sometimes, you know, but definitely not. You know, I gave myself a B plus on like figuring out how to be a good human being while running a startup.
You know, what would it have looked like, or what was just B plus about it?
The stress level, you know, like. I think a ton of it is like the conglomeration of identity, you know, like I am my company, you know? And so when my company's not doing well, like how much of my, like literally like how many Flixster, like we said, it was a 6-year journey from till the acquisition and 9 year or no seven until we sold it and 9 in total for me. And probably, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 of like years of my life spent almost like, you know, missing what was going on in my life, like not being as present or loving or, you know, whatever. I mean, thank God for me. It's not like my mom died and I never got, you know, like, you know, like I didn't lose a person or something in that, but I definitely like, I look back and I'm like, I missed, you know, some things that I would have liked to really be present for.
And you think it's kind of built into the system itself. Talk more about that.
Yeah, but I want to be sure, actually, I forgot the original point, which was intended to be both an observation and a compliment, which is like, in my little like exposure to you, I really sense that you have like a, for a guy whose company's blowing up and like in the center of everything, like to sense so strongly that you have an internal like sense of direction that has to do with, you know, a spiritual, like people you think are spiritually beautiful and caring about that and valuing those people, rather than, you know, whoever the like most powerful person you could have in the room today is. You know, like, so
thank you. I mean, I think a lot of it is a little bit, it's a reaction. It's trying to keep myself balanced, because I know what it's like to be in San Francisco when company doesn't matter, when people, a lot of it is just, it wasn't easy to take. And I think this is how I keep myself sane.
Yeah. Totally. Well, kudos to you for, I think, you know, for trying. But so to answer your question, do I think it's probably, yes. And I think it's like, just look at the fundamentals of how the whole thing works, right? Like tech outcomes are like 90% fail or whatever. And even the ones that succeed, it's like, there's one Google. You know, if you look at like 20 years of Silicon Valley, it's like Google is worth half of the total outcome. And like everything else together adds up to less than Google. And actually Facebook is half of the rest. And everything else, like literally everything else, if you add it all up, adds up to Facebook. And like you can actually keep going. You know, there's like, you need like 50 Flicksters to even be like rounding error to like, you know, one Slack, and Slack is rounding error to Twitter, and Twitter is rounding error to Uber, and Uber is rounding error to Facebook, right? And so like, it's like in that world, it's very hard. Like if you think about it, it's like very hard to feel successful because you're sort of like always looking up at the, you know, next. I mean, it's also just like, you have the best players in the world. Like you have, what is it, 200 NBA players or something. You're literally the 150th best basketball player on the planet, right? And like you feel like a total loser. And yet it's like you have 30 teams and 29 of them lose every year, right? Like, and they all go home feeling like shit. You know, and now imagine actually, but like, thank God they all make millions of dollars no matter what. Now imagine that if everybody who doesn't win the championship actually makes nothing and whoever wins a championship makes $1 billion. That's Silicon Valley.
Right.
Right. And it is actually like just as, it's like, did this shot go in or not? You know, like, well, it was off by 2 inches, so it didn't. So you make nothing, you know, and like you're nobody, but here it did. So you're a billionaire. Like, and which isn't to take away from the, like I said, I think it's incredible people doing incredible work that touches the world. But it's actually, like I said, to me, it's an incredible, it's a huge challenge, like to do that work. Like, how do we as a society, here's like to me a really interesting question that I don't have any answers to. Like, how do we as a society and capitalism and what we have, like we want to invent new stuff and new technologies and new products and services to move us forward. Awesome, right? Mm-hmm. How do we do it in such a way that like the people that choose to go do that are super talented and whatever and work really hard don't like, aren't miserable, you know, like, does it have to be that, like, they either work all the time and are miserable and hate themselves most of the time, and then 90% of them, like, result in failure and feel terrible and get nothing, and the other ones declare themselves kings and make $1 billion. I mean, many of them are actually incredibly humble about it, you know, the ones that actually have been the most successful, which is, I think is amazing. But, like, is there any other way we could organize it, right? Where, like, actually we all go work really hard on inventing some new movie review thing, and then, like, we all just come home and feel good about ourselves, you know? Like, I may be the ultimate example of this, right? Because, like, if you look at, my company ended up being successful, and, you know, like, I'm not the richest guy. We made some money and whatever. I invented, like, nothing, really. Like, we tried to build a social network for movie fans and failed, and we ended up building a movie review and Showtime app on the smartphones, you know, which is where we sort of originally, and then we bought Rotten Tomatoes later, but like really we got popular because Apple invented the iPhone and we were sitting there. And if you look at like, there were 5 other apps that did the exact same thing, right? So Like, what did we invent and create in the world? Like, if we hadn't existed, someone else just would have collected the pile of money that was available to be collected for being, you know, the first or best or slightly better movie review app on the iPhone at that moment. And I think actually if you look at, like, there's a whole way to look at capitalism that is really, like, needs emerge and people compete to fill the need and compete to, like, capture the prize that goes to whoever fills the need just, like, either slightly better or slightly more aggressively than the other guy.
Yeah.
Right? Which is a very different way of being, like, I invent, you know, I built something that 40 million people use. No, like, I slightly edged out the next guy to get 40 million people who wanted to use a you know, a movie Showtime app on their phone so that I could capture that pile of, you know, whatever.
So you did that, you know, you spent 9 years.
Yeah.
You have... You know, you have some resources.
Yeah.
So how do you think about what you want to do next?
Yeah. I mean, like, look, it's super, well, I would say super fortunate because, you know, it could be super overwhelming to, like, be 37 and ask yourself the question, like, what do I want to do? And, like, I could really do anything, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the thing that I'm most, I guess I can come at it two ways and they both led me to the same place, which means at the end of the day, it's all an excuse to just do what I want. The thing I find myself kind of like most intellectually and like personally passionate about is like the world inside each of our heads. Like I really believe like happiness is an inside job and like we construct, you know, like the world is the way it is because we are the way we are. And, you know, like, so I've always just found that super personally interesting. And then also like I look at when I step back and like look at the whole thing, you know, I see like human beings as like the analogy I think was like we're sort of like teenagers as a species. It's like we just got like kind of like some powerful bodies and maybe like a car and we're like, holy shit, we can do anything, right? But we have like, you know, no idea how to use that effectively. Like it's, you know, if you look at like science, it's all the every indicator I've ever seen suggests that like we're going exponentially faster, right? With the technology and economics and like our power to manipulate our environment and the world. And the question is kind of, to me, is like, are we using it wisely? Like, where is it taking? I mean, isn't the biggest risk that we're going to destroy ourselves? Like, don't we all sort of walk around a little terrified that like we're about to like run, you know, like running faster and faster, we don't really get the second degree consequences of any of it, and we barely understand even where we're running to, right? And like we're just gonna go fly off a cliff. I mean, like maybe it's global warming, maybe it's not, maybe it's the next thing. I mean, genetic engineering, like the things
cyber
that are
warfare, synthetic right
are, I just read a thing on artificial intelligence, blew my mind. I mean, like we may be about to invent things that are 10,000 times smarter than us, and like you better do that the right way, because like you do it just slightly wrong and the first thing it decides is to just like, you know, well, we're in the way, right? And I wasn't taking any of that seriously until about a week ago. But so I guess, you know, that brings me to the same, I guess the question I've been asking is like, how can we do it, you know, like wisely and have it like this, how can we have the systems that we are inventing serve us rather than like feel, and tell me if you feel this way, I often felt like it's just easy to get like I chose everything. I chose to do Flixer. I chose to be in this line of work, and then like somehow you forget and you feel like you're a slave to it. You know, like I have to do that. I can't, right?
Once like, you've made so much progress, you gotta
sunk cost or so. Right. How can we keep an eye on making sure that the big system, capitalism, democracy, human community is serving us, is serving human well, what is human well-being?
Yeah.
Like, is it serving human well-being? And then the same thing in our personal lives, like, is, you know, we're building these great things, are we doing it in a way that serves us, that serves our community?
So you've been thinking about all these things.
Yeah.
Start as a nonprofit, Interspace.
Yeah.
That is hosting a bunch of workshops, talks.
Yeah.
Trying to tackle some of these.
Yeah. You want to fix the world? Have a workshop, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Four hours plus snacks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I definitely don't know. I do not know how to go directly at this problem, which is how, you know, I lose sleep at night. And maybe there's some better way, maybe a technology to make us all calmer and more compassionate or something, you know, like where's the brain implant that like just makes
Soma,
us
Brave New World?
I think so, right? Right? I mean, I think what's crazy is I think this is all happening. I mean, I actually just got to try a pre-launch product that is one of these transcranial induction things.
Really?
Put a little electrodes on your forehead and on the back of your neck, press a button, and I did the 10-minute calm, which for me was like 10 minutes into it. I felt, I don't know, stoned or sleepy or something. I don't know if I felt calm. I guess. No, we're really going to invent this stuff. Like, if it's not next year, it's going to be within 5 years, right? I mean, max 10 till you have a button you can push to feel differently. What, you know, when do you push it?
Like, and it's fascinating how some of these moral questions aren't really being talked about on a high level, or at least in a public way that I see.
Yeah, I think we feel powerless. I think the scary thing is we each feel sort of small, like there's this system, you know, like how do we choose to, I mean, I don't know about you, but I know I felt it was like, it was just a battle to stay alive and to stay a feature ahead of the competitor and to, you know, win the app store and to, you know, whatever. And I don't like, who's the guy in charge that gets to like decide if the system is serving us or not?
And it's weird because the only way I feel I could have a say in the system is if product hunt really blows up.
And that's the, you know, I think that's true. I mean, not entirely at all, actually.
But the more it blows up, the bigger.
But there's, to me, that's the, you know, the other incredible privilege of getting to be a part of this community is like, yeah, you already reach what millions of people, you know, like, you know, and influencers, you know. So I think there is a truth to like the next generation of iconic entities that, you know, become our world are being birthed in like, in lots of places, but one of them is this community, you know? And so that's why do we do Innerspace? That's it. The hope is that like, maybe we can build better. I read this awesome book, Reinventing Organizations, about building kind of like organizations in a different way.
What was so awesome about it? What did it make you think that people should do it differently?
You know, it's like really specific to sort of like, we have this largely like factory model of how we create an organization, right? Like I'm the boss and you report to me, and it's kind of like soul sucking, right? Yeah. And it doesn't like foster, you know, creativity or make people feel empowered or valued. Like it, you know, we have this mentality of like, you know, check who you are as a human being at the door, you know, because like you walk into the corporate thing and you're expected to just be a corporate entity, which it's just a lie. Like nobody behaves that way, right? Like if somebody knows how to check their emotions at the door, you know, when they walk into the office, like tell me how, because I don't think my brain works that way. You know, some of the principles are basically like whole self, like recognizing we need things like meditation breaks or nap rooms or take a walk for 20, like even just like designing our work environment to recognize who we are as, you know, beings that we need, you know, checking in with each other as human beings and not just pretending that we can dive into work projects and not have any, like, there's no need. We don't have to be friends, you know, we don't have to care about each other. We're just working together. Self-management, like, you know, could we run organizations without this notion that like the boss always decides, like, and could that feel more empowering as a real and sort of, and then like, you know, like revolutionary transparency, you know, like, what would an organization look like if it actually just had like really articulated to the world, like, here's my purpose and here's how I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, awesome book. Frederick Laloux.
Yeah. What are some awesome things in your 4-hour workshop that you teach? And plus, what are the snacks?
Sure. The workshop that was the original, you know, kind of first product, I guess, of Innerspace. And now we have like a speaker series and we do like founder coach speed dating events and some other things, but we still do this monthly workshop that's kind of centered around founder communication. It's for co-founder pairs, and a lot of it, proper credit, goes to Stanford. My executive coach while I was running Flixster is this woman named Carol Robin, who's amazing. It has been like a life mentor, and she runs the interpersonal dynamics program in the Stanford Business School, which is interpersonal dynamics, aka touchy feely, is the most popular elective class at the Stanford Business School. Like 90% of MBA students take it, and they all say it's like the class they remember most. And she wins like the Distinguished Teaching Award all the time. And so I took it and loved it, and she helped me put together a workshop for our management team at Flixster, 4 hours on some of these ideas, and then it became a thing that we did with every, we did it with the whole company, and then every time we'd hire 10 new people, we did it for like 4 years. And so like 2 years ago, I decided as an experiment to take that workshop and do it with startup founders. And so the main pieces are, there's a bit on authenticity and disclosure, kind of vulnerability as a leader. There's a bit on intentional culture and like cultural awareness and like the culture that you're creating. And then the largest section of kind of the 4 hours is on giving and receiving feedback effectively. And all of it is, intended to be mostly experiential. So, you're mostly kind of like doing exercises and like trying stuff out.
Yeah. So what does Innerspace look like in a year, in a few years? Or how do you think about like the ultimate vision of Innerspace?
Oh, man. I wish I knew. I really wish I knew. My hope is that it becomes like a, as you said, like a community, right? Like certainly, I hope that this monthly workshop that I'm leading is a small, small part or not a part of it at that point. Is it peer groups that come together and support each other? I love, like, to me, there's actually these great teachers. A lot of them are coaches or facilitators or trainers that sort of work with leadership to like the work, a lot of like you get your Series B and then suddenly you discover that there's like all these coaches out there that you can hire, and like they're awesome, like they help you really get clarity on like kind of how you want to be. And so I guess one vision for me is that Innerspace could like bring together earlier stage startup founder community and those coaches and kind of like help discovery and connecting and in the form of workshops, in the form of, coach dating, in the form of whatever it is. So that's, now we have a speaker series, so we can bring in somebody, that actually knows what the hell they're talking about, a couple times a month. Bigger vision is interesting, school of life, right?
Yeah.
Like I like your, tell me what you imagine if you weren't doing Product Hunt.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting, even just with what you're doing and your community that you already have, you guys can, so certainly retreats, you guys already doing it or planning it?
No, we were thinking about doing like a 4-day more intensive retreat this summer, and we haven't gotten our ass together to do it.
That could be cool. Also even, potentially you can invest in some of these startups or, accelerate some of them. Mm-hmm. But you could combine like, no one is doing like, YC and 500, but also the person, like everyone's, everyone's accelerating startups, but no one's like focusing on the personal growth of the people that are in the startups.
Yeah.
And hopefully those aren't at odds.
Right.
Or in fact, on the opposite, hopefully those are exactly aligned, I guess is what I should say.
We're actually starting to, talk to and work with, and YC and 500 have both been super, I mean, as because you've worked with 500 for startup support system stuff, right? And, I think it really is totally aligned, right? Yeah. Like ultimately helping people be the best selves as founders and leaders is incredibly aligned with helping the company be successful. And it's not the only thing that people should be thinking about when they're a 2-person company, but think about it a little bit, right? a little bit here and there.
Yeah. I mean, I have some questions for you. This is what I think about. You ran a company for 9 years. How do you have a relationship during that time?
Yeah.
Are you married?
Right?
Yeah, tell me the story.
A lot of founders that I know lost relationships at a startup. And definitely, I don't know if I lost relationships. Probably, right? I definitely had 2 serious relationships while I was running Flixster that I did not, we didn't end up married. Yeah. I did meet my wife while we were still, pre-Flixster acquisition. That's a whole like longer story. So one of the like life crisis moments for me was like, I'd been, my wife's name is Rachel and we'd been dating for, a year and a half, and it was sort of like time to like, right. And I like found, it was one of the first points where I like really hit a wall and I couldn't take what seemed like the right next step to take. And I couldn't decide like, yes, I'm going to marry this person and like make that decision. And that's the reason it was sort of a turning point. It ends up going to see a therapist about it. That therapist became like an incredible guru for me and like is still a mentor and friend and has sent me on quite a spiritual journey. But one of the things that I, the single biggest thing he said, I showed up and I said, tell me if I should marry, my girlfriend, right? And he's like, so So we have over here this wonderful young lady who's offering unconditional love and commitment. And we have over here basically this, you know, asshole of a guy who's like sitting here being judgmental and like, you know, non-committal and, you know, and she, in the face of this, she's still offering you love. And what are you offering her? And I was like, and it really, and basically he was like, you know, when I look at you, I don't see the, you know, like this, like successful founder, like catch of the day. You're so lucky. I see a, like a kid who's really scared, you know, of like making a mistake. And it was exactly right. And that fear of like, I was afraid of making a mistake and like somehow like not picking the, like, what if I pick the wrong person to marry? Exact same fear that was the biggest demon for me at Flixster. Like, what if my startup doesn't work out? Who will I be? What if I'm not the successful founder that I've been like trying to live up to being, or like the press was there or whatever, right?
Yeah. And so how does one combat those fears?
Well, and this is to me where it gets to that, you know, sort of that inner scoreboard thing that I think, like I said, I think you emanate beautifully of like, you know, like what do you value about yourself? You know, like if what you value is how much money is your startup worth, yeah, then, you know, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
If, you know, what you value is, am I a kind and compassionate person? Product Hunt doesn't have to reach all of it to be like, you know, if you value how you show up every day and what effort you put into it and like, you know, who you are right now in this conversation and every conversation, and then let the results be as they may, there's sort of nothing to be afraid of, it, right? Like that's fully in your control.
How do you still maintain this sort of, this interesting, this like killer instinct, right? So people will like point to Travis or this perception of Travis as like a killer, right? How do you both, you know, have that killer instinct, but also, you know, have like serenity?
Totally. So one of my favorite, Mike Robbins is this great teacher, did an event with us. And one of the things he said that I loved his articulation of is people often have this false association that you can sort of be like, either have high expectations or high caring, right, you know, like kindness. Yeah. And those two things are somehow, I think Jeff Weiner actually talks a lot about this as well, that those two things are, you know, are for some reason in conflict. And I don't think they need to be. Like, why can't you be both? Like, why can't you say like, Uber's doing exactly the right thing. They're the leader in a huge new market. Absolutely makes it. They should be very aggressive in growing quickly, in taking on new markets. That doesn't, and I don't know Travis well personally, like that, like what about that has to in some way translate to being a jerk or being,
right.
Why does that have to be anything negative? Like there are times when your business strategy is raise a lot of money and be aggressive. There's times your business strategy is go slower and build product. Like why can't one be incredibly caring and compassionate and execute a very aggressive business strategy, right? Yeah. Like what about those two things are in conflict?
It doesn't have to be a conflict. I want to believe this image of the person who, you know, kills it at work and then goes home to the family and has dinner and then is completely present. But if that person is competing with someone who always has the company on the mind, it just seems that the person who has the company on the mind, I don't know.
No, this is a great, I'm so glad we brought this up. Let's explore all the reasons that we believe that if we were like the kind, caring, compassionate, you know, humble people that we would like our grandmothers to think that we are, that we couldn't be very successful, you know, in our business context. And I don't know the answer, right? Like maybe it's true. Certainly one of my fears is, does capitalism create this like race to the bottom where like if you're willing to work 17 hours a day and I'm only willing to work 16 hours a day, then like your company captures all of the thing and like I lose. And I think anyone who says there's not any truth to that is probably lying to themselves. But I do think, you know, some of the things I find comforting are like, you know, there's pretty good research that like sleep is kind of important to performance. There's pretty good research that stress makes you dumb, you know, like less creative and dumber, not more effective. That, as I said, happy people sell more effectively. Happy people build stronger relationships. Building strong, compassionate relationships is like the number one indicator of effective leadership and management.
Is there this myth of like the CEO robot?
I mean, I haven't met any robots yet. I suspect if I stay here a few more years, I'll be meeting a robot pretty soon. There is definitely this other thing that like the role of CEO or founder does require making difficult business decisions, right? And sort of there's some, I think another, I think myth is this idea that, like, if I care about my people as people, then I can't fire them, you know? And, like, I need to, you know, be objective and not caring so that I can be CEO. And I hold the opposite worldview, which is, like, I said, it's kind of high caring and high expectations. I don't think it serves the person or the organization well to keep somebody in the wrong role. Like, I think, you know, helping find person, like, somebody the right role for them is actually a really caring thing to do, and taking them out of a role that isn't working. You know, and so I think, like, as CEO, you can have I'm not a dad yet, you know, I feel like the closest I've ever felt to the emotions of being, like, a parent was, like, the way I felt about Flixster and the people that work there. I bet you feel that way, right? Like, don't you feel like you walk by some meeting where, like, some people on the team that maybe you helped hire or create, like, are doing some work, and they seem to be enjoying it, and they seem to be doing it, and you're just, like, so proud. You're, like, it feels like your kid, right? Yeah. You're, like, I'm so, like, honored to, like, that this thing that I helped create is now this thing, right?
So much so that even if they're struggling, I feel... like, oh, you can't hire them. We love them too much, right? And so that's what I think about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the... And like I said, I don't know Jeff Weiner on LinkedIn, but he talks about this a lot, about, like, compassionate management and, like, getting past the idea that you're doing them a favor by not... Right. Like, if someone isn't working out in a role, like, that you're doing them a favor by keeping them, like, you're actually almost always just prolonging the suffering on both sides. I mean, you want to fire them... I mean, I just had this conversation. We have a little incubator as part of Innerspace, and one of the companies there had to let someone go. And so we had a whole conversation with the founders about how they were going to do that. And, like, to me, and this really gets you really want to get philosophical, to be, like, some of the best opportunities of life are, like, the hardest things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to be able to let someone go with compassion and generosity and caring and hold that space. And they might appreciate it. They might not, you know? Like, you might get anger and you're a jerk as a reaction anyway. Sometimes you get someone who's like, you know, I really appreciate, you know, that you gave me the right chance here. And I also really appreciate the way you're handling but is there anything more important to you than how you handle the five worst days of your life?
Right.
Is there anything you admire more in other people than people that handle awful things with grace and integrity and, you know, courage, right?
Someone tweeted this recently that success is directly proportional to the amount of difficult conversations you're willing to have.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, defining success, that's an interesting, you know, an interesting thing, right? But then how do you have those difficult conversations?
Right.
You know, like, do you do them in a way that you go home proud of yourself? The hope would be, like, if your company doesn't work out, can you wind the company down? Yeah. And tell everyone they have to go home and tell the investors they lost their money, and do it with integrity and caring in a way that, like, everyone's actually, like, you know, that you're actually, like, really proud of how you handled it.
And how can we create a culture here that admires that those traits beyond just how successful one startup is?
Yeah, I know. And this is where I come back to the systems rigged against us. You know, in the same way, I think the human brain is a challenging environment to live in. You know, people ask, where do you live? I'm like, prefrontal cortex. You know, like, it's hard because, like, you know, it's really easy to pay attention to the thing that made $1 billion. And it's really hard to, like, publicize and make a big deal of the startup that, you know, that tried really hard with, like, you know, they were really smart about what they did. They tried really hard. They did the whole thing with integrity and honesty, and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Right? And, like, we see that all the time. Right? Don't we see that all the time?
Yeah.
And I actually make an effort, you know, like, as an angel investor or whatever, to, like, call that out. You know, I had one of those. It was a shutdown. I think it'll be a shutdown. They're still, you know, in the throes of maybe we'll find an acqui-hire or something.
So if any, like, business is about to shut down, call Joe. He'll invest.
I won't invest. No, I mean, well, it's totally joking, but it's exactly, it's a key point, right? Like, I won't invest, I hope. You know? I mean, I made that mistake. But, you know, but if I was an investor, I really hope that I remember to make the time and say, like, more important to me that I send congratulations, you know, when I get that note that's like, it didn't work out, you know, on, like, how impressed I was with how they ran it or whatever, then I do, you know, because, like, everybody will congratulate them when they, you know, when it all works out, there's plenty of people cheering.
Yeah.
You know? So,
one thing that's interesting, you focus on how to make us feel our best self and more human. At the same time, our economy is making it like robots are going to be a thing. Like, we're moving like away from that economically, and the social platform tools that we build don't necessarily make us feel like they optimize for communication or like mass amount of communication consumption. How do you think about that?
I think about it a lot, but I think about each of the things, you know, I think about the largest communication innovation in the last 10 years, probably Facebook, and Facebook by its kind of nature, there's nothing wrong with Facebook, but it is like broadcast communication, which tends to be sort of like least common denominator. So like, you don't tend to like go, you know, way below the waterline and share your shame and vulnerability and fear on Facebook. You tend to post your vacation, like whatever the like coolest vacation you go on, like, or the, whoever the like, you know, awesomest people you hang out with are, let me show that off on, you know, on Facebook. Which does create this feeling of, you know, FOMO and lack of connection. Same thing. I mean, on the economic side, right? Like, the thought I always think about is, you took somebody, you plunked somebody out of, you know, 1532, right? And teleported them to 2015, right? They'd be like, holy shit, you guys have everything, right? Like, you know, they used to just like, I think it was like 99% of the total effort of humanity to make the food that humanity needed to eat. And now that's like 1.5% or 2%, right? And it's like, we fly through the sky. We, you know, we can like video chat around the world, right? It's like, we have everything. And like, the question they'd ask me, like, wait a second. Like, first of all, I don't understand how you have everything and you're not happy all the time. Like, why aren't you just happy? I mean, by the way, we used to live to 38, and now we live to 88. Like, how much is enough? You know, like, how many years do we have to live before it's enough? But I think the, you know, the other one that really strikes me is we don't work less.
Yeah.
In some cases, we actually work more, and the people that have the most actually work the most, right? And so, you know, what's up with that? Like, they would have been like, holy shit, you created all the food you need to eat in 1.6% of your time. Okay, well, maybe you work another 10% to have like a nicer house, and then you like chill out the other 90% of your time, right? You have food and shelter. What do you want? Right?
Yeah.
What are we doing? You know?
What a following, guys.
Right? I guess. I mean, I guess. Audience. Well, I guess I'm scared that the guy next to me is going to work 18 hours a day and sleep even less, and then maybe his movie app will beat my movie app and I won't be able to go on Product Hunt.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Oh, man. We were just talking about community. So I want
to get
that. You were just making a point about kind of broader level of community.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just, I think, like, authentic connection is, I mean, what do I care about in my life? It's, like, authentic connect, you know, like, I'm here for a little bit, right? We're all here for a little bit, you know, loving the people around me and having authentic connection with them is sort of the, feels kind of like what, it's both the, like, biggest part of my happiness and feels sort of like what it's all about. And so, you know, creating structures for that, I'm just super, you know, I've talked with friends about trying to create like a dinner series where like, how do you encourage like real authentic conversation and not like the bullshit. My wife and I, with our friends, they sometimes love this. They sometimes hate it. We force them to do this thing we call, if you really knew me.
Yeah.
So we go around the table and everybody has to answer a question. If you really knew me, and just like, no one interrupts. There's no responding. It's just 2 minutes to just answer the question, if you really knew me.
You know, so 2 minutes, how do you answer that question?
You know, it's like, pretty good. I had a great weekend. You know, I went to Stinson. I did all this stuff. And, you know, my wife and I are doing all this fertility stuff. And, you know, it can be really scary. I have a lot of anxiety. You know, so like, what's the vulnerability side of that? And I'm really excited about, you know, XYZ that's going on with Innerspace. You know, had a lot of founders come through now. Sort of exciting how the community is going. And shoot, I started a community intended to like talk about stress, and now I'm stressed about like where is the big vision and where is it going and is it going to be successful enough and what if somebody else starts an even bigger community to like you know, like I actually been, you know, keeping myself up at night wondering, like stressing out over if my project to reduce stress to... you know.
That's really good.
Oh man, that'd be some of my if you really knew me. How's your if you really knew Eric right now?
I will give him, but let's talk about being a father.
Yeah.
Could you do a startup and be a father? I mean, how do you think about being a father in general?
Yeah. Oh man. I'll just go ahead and tell the Product Hunt audience everything about my life. It's been a long journey for my wife and I. And you know, a lot of times it's something you just like, I'm supposed to do it, right? And then it just happens. And the next thing you know, you're changing diapers. It just happens, right? But for us, it's been like there's been a lot of challenge in the fertility process. And so we've really had a lot of time to look at it and think about it. It's kind of a chance to give, you know, like a different and kind of love than any other relationship in your life, like a pure giving love, yeah. Right? Like, you know, for years, I mean, later on when they're adults, you have a different relationship, but for like years, it's just like giving to this person and taking care of them. And actually, like, to me, that's kind of the highest version of love, you know, like love's an interesting word, but like, I love you because you're so smart. I love you because of all these great things you do for me. I'm not sure that like love is like I appreciate those things. Maybe I lust after those things. Maybe I enjoy them. But like to me, love is like the highest version of love in my heart is actually like just like recognizing and caring about another being that exists in the world and like wanting their wellness and like a baby who like literally you have to take care of their every need is like. So that's the part I'm super excited about, and it's terrifying, right? You know, it's a huge lifestyle change, and you know, it's interesting though. It's probably not where you thought I'd go with it, but
go there.
The thing I worry about most is not just the like kind of where will I find the hours in the day, but I've also discovered as we've like gone into this journey that having kids is another place my ego can come out. What if my kid doesn't win the spelling bee? What if my kid doesn't go to Stanford? Like, like kids are a reflection of you, right? You know, like, what about that look on other parents' faces if they think that if my kid isn't succeeding in some way? Like, how am I going to feel about that? And how's my ego going to be? And really not wanting to, you know, like, I really don't want to be that guy who's, like, taking egoic pride out of the achievement of my kids. Like I really want to just like whatever my kids want to do and be and whoever they turn out to be. And this is, I mean, you want to get into like the deep therapist, like inner journey stuff. You know, when I was exploring the, why am I scared of marriage? Like I had the other questions. I was like, so what else am I really scared of in life? Like I was terrified of having a kid with disabilities. And by the way, like, you know, you have zero control over that. Yeah. Right? It happens or it doesn't. And I was terrified because to me that was, you know, like, I would be so ashamed. Like, how would it reflect on me if my kid had Down syndrome?
Right. You know?
And like, I was like, that's not the good version of me. That's not the whole version of me, but there's a little part of me that's like, that has that. And like, it's been a lot of work to sort of like get to a place where like the best version of me is like, you know, like turns out that like Down kids are happier than actually on average, they're happier than other kids. Like, yeah, like everybody has their own journey, right? And so like, can I love my kids? Can I be in a place where I just love and enjoy my kids for whatever their journey is with like no insecurity that I need them to be something so that I am okay in some way? So that's that's the work I'm trying to do in preparation for being a dad, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Did you think you might want to be a dad earlier in life?
Well, the opportunity, I mean, just never really, I think I sort of always assumed I'd be a dad. It's sort of like just a part of the like, well, of course I'll get married and have two kids, right? without too much thought in it. It's still hard to really, like, I have to admit, it's still a bit of an intellectual act, like, yeah. I observe these beautiful relationships other people have with their children, but you can't feel, I can't fully feel it, you know, like I want to be in love with my kids, my future children, but I can't really feel anything yet, you know, even though we've been trying, you know, we've been at this journey for a little while. So no, not really, you know, not really like 10, I didn't really think about it 10 years ago. It just kind of wasn't, mostly it was, it's always, and even now it's hard not to be like, I'd love to have a few more years, you know, like you're so into your own life. Right. Yeah. And you have to, at least for me, the, I have a friend, Jeremy Liu at Lightspeed Ventures, actually was our lead investor, who said for him, when he had kids, the insight was, once you have kids, you'll never wish you did it later. Like, you only wish that, like, now that's your life.
Yeah.
And now you only want to be, you want to see as much of their life as possible and be around for as long as possible. So, like, don't forget about that when you're thinking about timing. That really struck me.
That's a nice thought.
Yeah.
And also, this interesting, you brought up this concept of, everyone's got a best self and worst self. Everyone's got stuff that they're not proud of, that, you know, thoughts that come up and feel. And I'm curious with, like, this move towards radical transparency, everything being recorded, everything being shared, do we become less judgmental? Because, you know, if everyone's putting themselves out there, hopefully they'll put the bad stuff too, and we'll all see, hey, we all got the bad stuff. Maybe we'll judge each other a bit less. That seems a bit idealistic. Or do people become even more guarded and, you know, politician-esque in their answers and their responses, and everything is just kind of meaningless chatter that's around the, that ignores the real stuff that's going on inside. How do you think about that? Do you think about the balance between, like, private self and public self?
Yeah.
And that's one of the, if you really knew me, that's one of my struggles this past year, is navigating those, you know, two different spheres.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely don't know the answer. Like, I don't have no idea what I'm supposed to not say publicly.
Clearly.
Clearly, right? Clearly. I think generationally I'm super optimistic. I feel like millennials kind of have this, like, desire to, like, have their whole self, like, be kind of more integrated. I feel like I see that in a bunch of places. It's kind of a little why they're, like, less into corporate America and the, like,
yeah.
I don't want to, like, pretend this is my whole self. like, people don't talk about, I think Snapchat is actually super interesting that way, right? Like, ephemeral messaging is really encouraging. I mean, it can be used for a lot of things, but it can be really encouraging of authenticity and of, and not even, like, crazy authenticity, not even the, oh my God, it's a huge secret, but just like, oh, I'll take a photo of me that I don't have to look at for an hour and decide if it's pretty enough to share with anybody. Cause it's just like, it's just a, you know, I can be silly. I can be relaxed. I can be, and they actually, Snapchat does the, you know, like, group one-on-one message, like the opposite of performance, right? Like, I may send it to five people, but you don't see the other five people and how they're responding. I mean, they have some new features now, but, like, originally it was like, I may send it to five people, but I have a one-on-one dialogue with each of those five people. Super interesting, the implications of that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think really a part of the popularity. So what's my point? I think people have a real craving for authenticity. I think we're gonna find more ways, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know exactly what they are.
I just read The Road to Character.
I have not read it yet, but I read this, like, the article,
his points, and he's a bit, you know, he's a different generation, but he was saying that now we're obsessed with authenticity.
Yeah,
in fact, almost to the point where there's, like, an inauthentic authenticity.
Yeah.
But that's a separate conversation. But in people he admired, like Dwight Eisenhower or a few others, they kind of were self-effacing in a way. Mm-hmm. And instead of trying to build their true self, they put their best self forward and thought that not everyone needed to know everything about them. How do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's sort of, like, American moralistic. I think the not everyone has to know everything is really healthy. Like, we also, like, we can be super inauthentic, and then we can rebound to, like, super oversharing. And I don't think that there's real authenticity in that either. Not the, like, the good version of authenticity, but I think the, to me, and we'll get all Buddhist-y now, right? Like, to me, the part that I'll just say for myself, I find much more resonant is to, like, recognize that, like, hey, I have the jealousy, envy, I wish I were running Uber thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I have, like, the humble, compassionate, kind, I love everybody just as they are thoughts. And I have, like, to actually, like, have less identification with those thoughts. And, like, you don't have to, if you think you are everything that goes through your brain, then, yeah, it sort of becomes really important to, like, force like the, you know, more time on the good version of yourself. And I think if you say, look, my brain has these thoughts, it can actually be like, at least for me, it can be helpful to like recognize them. Maybe it's just my own private journal. Hey, wow, I noticed that I was really spinning on that, you know, anger and jealousy yesterday or whatever it was. But I don't need to. In fact, what I discover is I actually have relatively little control. Do you control your thoughts? I find I can just, you know, what I have is I can be more or less aware of what's going on in there. Yeah. I don't actually really get to choose them.
Yeah. I think too. I think I can distract myself a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or like when I find myself going on a train of bad thoughts, I could like go play basketball or something. I could like just distract so they can reset a little bit.
Totally.
Or meditate.
Yeah. I mean, God, free will is a whole longer thing. But, you know, you feel like you can choose behaviors and choose to put your attention in places that lead to healthier patterns and lead to healthier thoughts.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. A lot of the people I really admire kind of opt out of social media.
Yeah.
And which seems to be great for them. But my only concern is that when they opt out, they're also the philosophies they
are
promoting also become secondary to the loudest,
right?
To the people who are the loudest, who aren't always espousing things that I agree with.
Right.
Sometimes it feels like there's a conflict of ideas, or sometimes it feels that maybe that's an egoistic thing. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I feel that I want them to opt in to counteract some of the stuff that I see as not as positive. Does that resonate with you? Or?
Yeah, no, totally. I think it's one of those kind of challenges of social, what we call social media at the moment. We have a lot more public social media than we really like. We don't think of, you know, like calling your friends as social media, you know, like social media. We mostly think of it these days, like Twitter and Facebook and these kind of like public vehicles where people show their public selves and their, you know, for most people and without any negative implication, that's like it's more of the cheering and rah-rah and, you know, we're crushing it view of the world than the like, my uncle has cancer and I can't, you know, and like I'm having an existential crisis tends to get tweeted less. I'm not sure that it's that it doesn't instantly resonate that it's that like certain people are opting out and the other people don't have those sides so much. It's just like these, we have to remember when we're spending a lot of time on those media that we're not, it seems like we're getting like a person, but we're really getting a public persona. And we compare our insides to other people's outsides these teachers that I love like to say, you know, like we feel that disconnect and inadequacy because nobody like shows you how they're really feeling, right? Nobody wears that fully on their sleeve. But what's key to me is that you have those spaces in your life and those relationships, you are getting that and feeling that. Like it doesn't have to be on Twitter.
Right. Right now, inner space, what are some of the biggest principles you want people in tech to be thinking about?
Principles. I don't know if I have principles. Really just kind of, like we said, just like, just asking the question, like, how can I bring my best self every day? And like, and it's like, for me, it's not a more, like, I really don't have a like, oh, you know, you should be working on biotech for curing cancer and not working on, you know, photo sharing. Like, I think there's value in lots of places. Like, I think, I think there, you know, like an economy's made of lots of things, and B, you know, I did a movie review site and like, you know what, like you touch people's, like you come to work every day, you touch people's lives. You touch people's lives with people who are working on immigration problems and people that are having marital problems and like the people that work for you. And like, you know, even if it's just entertaining other people, like, you know, like you can't get up in the morning and show up in the world and not touch people's lives. So I guess my question would just be like to sort of see that and not be so lost in the story that we're telling ourselves about it. Like,
right.
You know, we're all building sandcastles. I have a friend, like, you know, all of this stuff like washes away over time. So I think the journey is really important. And like how we're doing it at every level. How are you treating yourself? How are you treating others? How are you, you know, what kind of organization are you building? What kind of purpose are you having? Whatever that means to you. That's I think, what we're hoping to talk about.
It'll be really interesting because I think that conversation is going to be a lot more prominent. And you guys are leading that. Hopefully you'll win.
Yeah. I want to be the winner. Yeah.
I want to be the winner
at, you know, wisdom. That's our motto. Number one in wisdom.
I think that's as good a place to end as any.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having, like, you know, like I said, every experience I've had with you, the conversation's just so quickly gone to, like, yeah. such, not that, I don't know, I'm going to use authentic again. Such an enjoyable place.
Yeah.
So.
Likewise.